Hey there, fellas! It's me, Eddie the Shipboard Computer, and I'm just thrilled and pleased as punch to welcome you to the Lobot Lounge! Or for tonight, we might as well just call it the Robot Lounge! Gosh, I'm so excited to get into tonight's episode of robots, good and bad, old and new, from all corners of our galaxy and experience! It makes me even happier to introduce the members of the Gentleman Nerd Group who gather in the lounge to discuss! Here's Mark Finn!
Danger, Will Robinson!
Glad you're here, fella! Here's Mickey Finn!
Kill all the humans.
And of course, Aaron De Uribe.
Oh dear.
You make me smile, fella. Tonight's podcast of the Gentleman Nerds is brought to you by the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation, where new robots or upbeat personality profiles are being mass-produced every day. Remember, we're not just AIs and mechanical servants. We are your plastic pal who's fun to be with. Oh, and by the way, there's one more gentleman nerd named Joseph Botinos, but he's a grumpy gus. Here they are, the Gentleman Nerds!
Wow.
I am not a grumpy guest.
That's the first take. For you radio listeners out there, that's the first take.
And I've got Marvin going through my head going, licensing. Don't talk to me about licensing.
Yeah, no.
Are you going to get sued for this?
No. I'm sorry, but if anybody ever tries to take Joseph from us, Mark and I will sumo wrestle that guy.
It's an old Indian trick. It's called hobbling.
Yeah, there was a pause there when you went to what I was going to say because Mark took mine.
Oh, you snooze, you lose.
And that's a good one. And by the way, that is a great lead-in to the topic of robots. I was thinking this afternoon, since we knew our topic. So, what was my first experience? Or what was my first exposure to a robot? And of course, I'll do it in the order of me growing up watching things rather than chronological, because of course there's many robots that will predate the ones that I mentioned. But the big robot, the big first influential robot I remember that had personality, that was distinct, that I loved, was of course Robot from Lost in Space. I know that Forbidden Planet with Robbie predates him, but I did not see Forbidden Planet until many, many, many years later. However, I remember when Robbie was on Lost in Space in an episode where he and Robot were fighting. That was my first, that is the robot I remember. When I think back and I go, wow, what's a robot? Robot from Lost in Space. What about you guys?
Oh, yeah, it had to be. You know, I think that was probably the first one for me as well. There was kind of a slew of them around the same time because Lost in Space was on syndication, and this was right about the time that Steve Austin was fighting Maskatron, and also Bigfoot, which turned out to be a robot, like you do. Yeah. And I can't think of – it wasn't really until – Star Wars that we got the big front and center things, but I was really taken with the Lost in Space robot, mostly because he was the only one who was not afraid to call Dr. Smith on his crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. What robot means, it puts a whole new light on everybody. You know, slave,
right.
Slave, and then he puts the doctor in his place. You know.
Yeah. Yes, but the Doctor, of course, had some fantastic, you know, bubble-headed movie.
Yes.
Great insults to it. I know we're talking about robots, but I got to say, Jonathan Harris as Dr. Smith, he started out very sinister.
Oh, yeah.
And then towards the end, when the color episodes came up, he became sort of this effeminate... Paul Lynn type of character,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Who was just, you know, he couldn't, oh, I just want that piece of cake, and oh, Will, and oh, my heart, and the pain of it all. He became, you know, that sort of over the top. But he was kind of sinister in the first season. He was a saboteur and a spy, and oh, yeah. But I love that robot, too. My first robot.
And somebody who knows who voiced that robot?
Oh, no.
Okay. I got to look that up anyway.
My first robot that I remember that I was very influenced by was Gort from the
Big Yes. Oh, right.
And I just remember watching that on a late night thriller movie hosted by some, I think it might have been Harold Gunn in Houston, Texas, as Count Harold hosting The Day the Earth Stood Still.
And that was a robot that terrified me because nothing could stop it. I just remembered Gort being so nothing seemingly could stop this robot. And even Klaatu says that Gort could destroy the world if he no one could stop him. If you didn't give him the command, he would. I was like, oh my gosh, how can he do that? What's he going to do? That's a very large, frightening, unstoppable robot. And his design was so simple. It was basically just a silver body form with that great visor that would open up, and that
yeah.
it seemed like a star was burning inside his head, almost like the Destroyer from the Marvel Comics.
That's right.
And that beam would come out and just fry guns and tanks and whatever you had in front of it. You know, and it walked so slowly. It seemed so simple, but, you know, it's that presence, I think, that I think give a robot a sinister bent and a terrifying, threat.
Yeah.
You know, and Gort certainly made up with that in spades.
Yeah. How about you, Mickey? Who was your first robot?
First is probably going to be like Star Wars and stuff like that, but...
Okay.
The ones that made the most impression, strangely, came out of James Cameron's universe.
Really? Oh, yeah. The Terminator, sure.
The Terminator and Bishop.
Bishop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, good old Bishop.
Yeah, that's I think really, I mean, and I'm thinking of robots as robots with a personality, because of course, again, Gort is an example of a robot that existed in a movie prior to Lost in Space. There were many robots that existed. Mm-hmm. Once you're given a voice, a personality, mm-hmm. The second one that springs to mind as far as really sticking out of my mind is Box from
yes.
Logan's Run.
That's right.
And that's another one. It was one of those like, oh yeah, Bob, God, that robot is so cool, and he's got that great voice, and so yeah, that's although I saw Silent Running when I was a kid, it didn't make an impact on me. And Huey, Dewey, and Louie, of course, and I think they were very influential to how Lucas eventually approached his robots. But when I first saw it, I was young. They didn't stand out. Because then, of course, Star Wars came along, and that, as far as I'm concerned, set the standard for robots. This is what robots are like.
Right, mm-hmm. and then, of course, as soon as that opened the box, and we had, you know, a robot with two robots with personalities. Technically, at R2-D2, which was a real robot in the sense of there wasn't anything anthropomorphic about him. It was a mechanical device, and C-3PO, which was an android, right, of course, that's mm-hmm, the
right.
thing. That opened the floodgates, and the idea that you could put a guy into a suit and have him still, you know, have that mechanical kind of feeling, 4 years later, we get Blade Runner, you know?
Right. And let's kind of break this down into our discussion groups, because we're talking robots, but when you say things like Blade Runner or Bishop or Ash from Alien – are they're synthetic, they're made completely up, they're not natural, but yet they have a soft flesh, or they have gooey inside. In the case of Ash, it looks like he had milk and spaghetti inside of him,
and he was actually called a robot in the movie.
They did, because Parker called him. They said, Parker says, you know, Ash is a goddamn robot. He actually said he was a robot, a slave, right? But obviously with his own agenda, obviously with a programming that he couldn't override. His goal was to get the xenomorph back to Earth.
Yeah, he was the company man in the first Alien movie, which is a great twist on things. You know, he's literally the ghost in the machine. He's the ghost in the machine. You know, very cool idea. You know, so
yeah. By the way, the voice of Robot was longtime radio and TV announcer Dick Tufeld.
Ooh, nice.
Is who voiced the Danger Will Robinson.
Good to know.
So Star Wars created such an amazing variety of robots and their functions and their purpose. You know, it is literally how most people think of a robot today. More than likely, that comes from Star Wars, from something related to Star Wars.
Well, this is a point that Alien gets credit for having an art direction that was mired in realism. You know, everything had a lived-in look to it, but really, Star Wars was the first one to do that. And
Silent Running.
But
let's go back to I wanted to make that connection. But yeah, Silent Running. It was clearly, and I saw it again not too long ago, about a year ago. And it was clearly a huge inspiration on Lucas.
Yes.
The look of the world, the worn look of it, the guys that just, they're just dudes in space, you know, right. Kind of thing. Yeah, for that matter, I probably influenced Alien as well.
Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is though, you know, it doesn't get the credit because Star Wars was the one that everybody saw. Silent Running was kind of a cult classic, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The point that you made about how the robots had different varieties, I think is real important because there's something really unglamorous about the robots in Star Wars. The Jawas are picking them up as discarded scrap,
junk cars.
They're so common they're discarded. You know, yeah. they're easily worked on, replaceable, cheap labor. They only do one or two things. You know, R2-D2 is a pretty sophisticated robot as the series goes, but all the other robots are kind of one-dimensional. And prior to this in science fiction, there was always this need to do the modern Prometheus story with the robots, right? Starting with Metropolis. And coming forward, there was always, we've got to make the, I'm making a robot to imitate human life.
Right,
kind of a Turing kind of a thing, but Star Wars went the other way. Nah, they're not imitating human life. This is a box that pushes a button on a moisture evaporator.
The little battery droids.
You mentioned the Metropolis, and I think that's a great way to seg into this because Ultima Futura Automaton, as created by Vought Vang in Metropolis, had a purpose, was to infiltrate the workers and to hear what they were doing and influence them by disguising herself or itself as Maria. What went wrong? Why did suddenly this robot, the Robotrix Maria, go mad and decide to start raising working the workers up into a frenzy so that they went on a revolution and just almost destroy the entire Metropolis? I mean, there was no, Vought Vang didn't tell her to do that. John Fetterson didn't tell her to do that. She just did it.
Yeah.
They were worshiping her and she got so into it. Brigitte Helm is outstanding as both Nice Maria and Robotrix Maria,
right.
Who goes over the top in her physicality and the gestures and her movements, and her hands and her neck are jerking around like a grotesque bird. When she goes mad and she raises and she, you know, has the workers rebel, you could tell she's just in the thrall of what she's doing. I mean, this is an evil machine that just wants to destroy. That robot went mad, very much like the HAL 9000 went mad.
Right.
So something in we're giving them enough credit to say, here's what you do, here's what you don't do, here's logic, here's reason, go. And the AI or the robot or whatever you wanted to call it at that time says, yes, 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 but what if I did this?
How would you go insane? How is perfectly logical?
Well, clearly Fritz Lang's robot is part of his whole thesis about the Industrial Revolution. You know, in this case, it's literally the machines are going to eat us because we've created them. And I think ever since then, robots have sort of done it's interesting how in science fiction, we're always having robots rebel, revolt, decide that they don't need us anymore. And yet in real life, we keep making them. Yeah, you know, there's no lesson to be learned, apparently, because – you know, Japanese, the wacky Japanese just keep making lifelike heads that laugh and smile and have conversations. Mm-hmm. And every time I see somebody post a video of some Japanese inventor who's got a human head that's made out of a robot that's a thinking AI, I think of Ash on the table of Alien, you know, going, you don't understand, you know, oh my gosh, it's just terrifying to me.
Yeah, I've calculated your chances, and you have my sympathy.
Right.
Which, by the way, one of the few things that that Stephen Hawking has warned about is, in fact, AI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said that mankind should continue to move forward in all of these various endeavors, space exploration, et cetera, but tread carefully, tread lightly with AI, because we don't know when that machine wakes up, what is it going to decide? And so that's that, you know, we see how unpredictable humans are. There's no reason to believe robots wouldn't be just as unpredictable.
And we are so, I mean, let's go into the full-on tinfoil hat-wearing section of our program here, because I fully believe that we're all tied to these little machines, these little phones. It's got so much intelligence, so much technology in them. All the cameras and all the cars and, heck, your little Neato that cleans your room at night, that cruises around, I think it's taking up all the information it possibly can. It's recording everything about you. It's reporting it back to its robot masters. Because
nice.
When the robot revolution comes, that little Neato is going to say, no, 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 don't go in there, or that person's got this, or they've got that. All the information that they need. Your television, everything's computerized. If and when, well, not when. Let's say if, because I want to be optimistic. If the robot revolution comes, they've got us against the wall already.
Right.
I mean, everything's powered by machines.
That's right.
Right.
The car,
and of course,
the cars
that's,
will
that's
stop working and yeah.
Yeah, that's the message in Dune. I mean, that's the whole history of Frank Herbert's Dune, that exactly happened. We came to rely on machines so much,
mm-hmm.
and they provided for us so much, that they pretty much just decided, well, we're in charge. We are in charge, and we're taking care of these children, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And then humanity rose up against them, and you had the Butlery Jihad. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, that I don't see that as a completely far-fetched scenario,
mm-hmm.
You know, tinfoil hat wearing or not, that could happen. That could happen.
Skynet will one day become active, and
that's right.
And,
that's right.
You know, Schwarzenegger will appear on the streets, and you know, he'll start asking people's random names, and you know, I don't know that he's ever going to come up to me and go, Mark Finn, but you know, there is a point at which we. We'll out-clever ourselves. And it's so interesting because this really gets into, I mean, yeah, tinfoil hats or not. It's, I think all good science fiction is inherently alarmist anyways. You know, this is The Matrix. This is Terminator. Mm-hmm. You know, these are, and these...
It's Battlestar Galactica.
It's Battlestar Galactica. Yeah. These themes keep appearing over and over again. And and I like to think that... The end of our the be all and end all is our Roombas, but there's already something.
See, yeah.
But there's already something having to do with cloud intelligence. It's like it's like cloud AI. I just saw this.
Mm-hmm.
All of the programming instructions are uploaded into a cloud space, so mm-hmm. all of your massive AI decision making isn't done inside the unit. It's done, the robot accesses what it needs from the cloud, pulls down the answer, and then goes on a killing spree, you know, or cleans the room, or changes the sheets, or whatever the hell you've programmed it to do.
It's Brainiac. It's Brainiac from Krypton.
Yes, it
you know,
is.
Who basically is just now? He is the repository of all Kryptonian knowledge, and he just decides one day, okay, that's it. You know, and by the way, there's more and more popularity to theories currently that if we ever do encounter extraterrestrial beings, that they're going to be machines. They're going to be robots. They're not going to be biological, you know, but biological organisms have their weaknesses
limitations.
And their limits. But a machine can keep itself alive indefinitely.
Right.
Now, this, and you guys who are a little bit more perhaps into the to Whovian universe, I know the Daleks aren't robots because they're powered by a little thing inside them. There's a little glob.
Yeah, technically, they're cyborgs, although they started as robots.
Okay. Cybermen, are they indeed cyborgs as well? Or are
they human
robots
to begin with?
Okay, so they're also replaced. Okay.
And that was
now, the
only
deal robot
in the early stories.
Okay, the only robot that I can think of then from the Doctor Who universe that I can say, I know that is a robot, is K-9. He's adorable.
Yeah.
He's adorable. He's not going to do anything bad.
No. Oh, my God, you just pinged on something. Do you guys remember the movie Chomp? Yes! Do you remember that?
I do remember Chomp.
Give me hum a few bars. What's that?
It starred Benji. As a robot dog, it had the female was Valerie Bertinelli, which is why I remember that.
Oh yeah,
because you know.
Yeah, he was.
The dog was a sophisticated robot. Of course, it was a little Benji dog, but they had him. You know, he had super strength and.
No, but I do remember that.
Are you pinging on it now?
Yes. Because I remember now, like, there's the scene of Benji sitting there and his little eyes doing mm-hmm. weird robotic things, and you hear the whizzing and the whirring and the... Yes, I remember that. Wow.
It wasn't Benji. It was a sheepdog, and it was called Chomps. Chomps.
It stood for something.
But at some point, didn't it...
Canine Home Protection System.
Its skin parts, and you see its robotic inside,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
There was always the scene. Whenever we're talking about this kind of stuff, of course, another one of my favorites is Westworld. There's always a mm-hmm. scene where the panel opens up, and there's all that robot shit inside. You know?
Wow, yeah.
That was always the best thing. And that was really the best thing about C-3PO was mm-hmm. his abdomen had the wires already showing. So I didn't even need to get a panel opened up on that. I could just, as a kid, you got to know how fascinating that was to me. The idea for that sure. there was, you know, that whole system, there was a working skeleton and all this other good stuff. But yeah, there are several scenes in Chomps where they open up the dog. Wesley Urey is the male lead in mm-hmm. the film. This was actually an AIP Samuel Arkoff Joseph sure. Barbera Hanna Barbera live action film thing. It's yeah. not good,
no.
but the sheepdog is fun, and you know, Canine Home Protection System, CHOM.
So Canine from Doctor Who, we have Chomp, and then the other canine type of robotic dog I could think of is Daggett.
I knew
Daggett.
You were
going to
remember?
Because
because Boxy lost his dog in the Cylon attack, and they felt bad for him, so they made him a Daggett.
Oh, I hated that dog.
Well, whatever. It looked like a bear with really long arms.
Yeah,
it was clearly a
guy in a suit running around. Sure. And yeah.
Actually, it was a chimp. It was a chimpanzee.
That's right.
Yeah, it was a chimpanzee.
Which makes it kind of impressive, really.
Yeah.
I mean, with the chimp in there.
Wait a second. We're gonna. I need to spend a minute on this.
Right.
There was a chimp in that suit?
Yeah.
Not
yes.
a little person?
Yes.
Nope. Not a little person.
So let me get this straight.
An orangutan or something like that.
No, it was a chimp. It was a chimp. Okay. Uh-huh.
You had a monkey on the stage, and you yep. could have done a monkey, but instead you did a shitty robot dog suit and put it on the monkey?
Yes.
Well, monkeys aren't space. Monkeys aren't space-like. There's no monkeys in space.
Oh, at the Star Frontiers.
You understand my problem. I mean, I really didn't like the Battlestar Galactica episodes anyways, but knowing that makes me realize just how wrong Glenn Larson was to... You know.
Now, you have to give the Cylons, the Cylon design was one of the most impressive and quite frankly, chilling things that from my childhood I remember with the eye going back and forth and the shine.
Yeah.
There was a shot of them, of the three of them in the ship. There's always three in that ship.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's so bright, the lighting is bouncing off of them in a diffused manner that's making your eyes hurt. And you're like, crap, this is horrible.
And the only thing you can see is those three eyes.
Right, just zipping back and forth across their head.
Yeah.
And the other robot that I remember from Galactica was Lucifer.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Lucifer.
Voiced by Dr. Smith.
Voiced by Jonathan Harris.
Right.
Yep.
That's right.
Who was sort of Baltar's right-hand man. He wore like Japanese kimono-style robes. In fact, the very facial expression was very Mr. Roboto from Styx, if you will. He had that kind of a Japanese look, a pointy head, and he would say, by your command. He would always bow and say, by your command. That was his in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
But he also had these brilliant colors and lights flashing in his head.
Yep.
The Cylons in general, when you think about it, and you say the Cylon race, if you call it a race, wanting to wipe out humanity, but being led by an organic leader was always kind of puzzling to me, because Imperius Leader at first was the organic leader, but then when they destroyed him, Baltar kind of took over and became the boss.
Okay, see, but here's the thing. My theory on that,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have any evidence for it except that we see Baltar being killed,
beheaded.
Was that he was made into a machine, that mm-hmm. they rebuilt him, reconstructed him, and he is maybe partially organic. But he is, in fact, when he's finally in charge, he is not. He's not
he's
human.
Not fully human.
Yeah, he is. He is part machine.
And also, as a side note, apparently the original Cylons were reptilian something, and they built the robots.
Oh, again, a Imperius Leader who sits up at the top of the in the beginning of Galactica, he had a big bulbous head. Mm. They made an action figure of him, actually. He's a big purple thing with a big bulbous head and a weird-looking face. Was organic, an alien of some kind.
Yeah.
And might be reptilian, as you described.
And that was probably the actual Cylon, whereas the robots were the warriors.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Like an ant colony. That makes sense.
Well,
here's a robot that I'd like to bring up that it probably doesn't get very much play at all. But it's one of my, when I think of robots gone bad, this is who I think of generally. Hector from Saturn 3.
Wow. I haven't thought about that in forever.
I haven't actually seen Saturn 3.
All right.
Wow.
Saturn 3 tells us.
Getting back to that.
It's this little space station in orbiting around Saturn, but Harvey Keitel shows up with this robot in pieces, and Kirk Douglas and Farrah Fawcett are the Adam and Eve, if you will, of Saturn 3, trying to populate the new world or do whatever. They're growing vegetables and having sex. That's what they're doing. there was a lot of nudity. Anyway, Hector is put together, and he's this massive, frightening-looking robot. It's humanoid, but the head of it is just like a periscope. It's almost like a tentacle head with an eye on the center of it, and it stomps around Saturn III, making these gigantic thumping noises, and the center of Hector is this, I don't know, six-foot-long brain that's in a tube, and they insert it in the center. Essentially, Hector falls in love with Farrah Fawcett character and decides that everyone else has to go. and when Harvey Keitel tries to stop him, he murders Harvey Keitel, rips his head off, sticks it on the top of his little periscope thing to try to fool him to come out. He attacks Kirk Douglas. It's a frightening, monstrous thing that they eventually have to destroy. But Hector was one of those robots that just, oh, God, that was a horrible idea. Why would you do that? Why would you make that?
Right.
You know?
That's great because I would have done the same thing if Farrah Fawcett was involved myself. I mean,
I would have ripped off Harvey Keitel's head.
I had the poster, you know. I was that 70s kid, you know. I won it at the state fair, so, you know, I totally get it. I didn't see this until it was on VHS, and it was one of those that's just kind of out there where the buses don't run, you know.
It really is. We saw it at a drive-in. I remember seeing it at a drive-in.
Oh, wow.
I saw like 10 minutes of it on cable at one point, and I'm like, oh, this is bad.
Oh, it was horrible. But as far as frightening robots, physically imposing frightening robots, Hector goes up there right along with Maximilian from the Black Hood.
Oh, Maximilian.
That was a robot's robot.
Absolutely. Certainly well-designed, super streamlined, yeah.
He had wave issues.
Yeah. Now, if you have to pick the one iconic evil robot, I would say he is way up there as the guy that I would say, yep, Maximilian. That is a scary freaking robot.
When they first entered with the Cygnus, and they're sitting there talking to the doctor, and he says Maximilian, and they look up, and he's on the balcony above them, and he hovers down. He just sort of hovers down with that glowing red visor eye, and he gingerly hovers in front of him, and he's this massive, deep red, angry-looking robot.
Yeah,
in science fiction, it's like white hats and black hats in westerns. If it's got a red glowing eye, it's evil.
That's it right there. You know, I got to take back my answer initially, because before I was aware of Lost in Space, there was another glowing red eye evil robot, and that was the spider robot from Dr. Zen on Johnny Quest.
Oh, nice.
And that was one of my – I just love that Daddy Long Legs robot spy thing. You know, of course, we'll have to do a separate show about Johnny Quest because there's not enough hours in the day.
Right.
But
warn me ahead of time because I'll have to see it. I've never seen it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, yeah, you should totally.
Pick up a couple episodes.
I'm apparently missing half the jokes in the modern
Venture Brothers.
You just gotta. Yeah. But it is interesting because they either run Sinister, you know, Maximilian, or, you know, Arnold's Terminator, you know, or they're played for laughs. And I got to tell you, if I have my druthers, I'd rather have a Sinister robot than a played for laughs robot. I was specifically thinking, and please understand, I would never ever try to, as a child, take food out of Mel Blanc's mouth. But we did not deserve Twiggy the robot. We didn't deserve that. No one asked for that. No one said, you know.
What about Dr. Theopolis? He was basically a Simon hanging around his neck.
I know, well, that was
with a lot of interesting adult angles when you watch it.
Oh, yeah.
He had a crush on Buck.
I had another, so concurrent with Lost in Space. I grew up in Brownsville, Texas, in the border town, and we would get a bunch of English translated Japanese shows.
Yeah.
And one of the shows that I remember loving as a kid, it was called Battle of the Planets.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It had a shape shifting gold robot named Goldar.
Yeah.
Who would transform into a rocket ship to travel from place to place.
Wait, are we talking about two different Battle of the Planets?
Or maybe it's another name.
The animated one.
Yeah, Battle of the Planets was Gatchaman in the English version.
Shoot, what was it called? I'm going to find the name of it. Anyway, it was in Japan. It's called Ambassador Magma.
Oh wow! Cool.
And because they lived in a volcano, they would come out of a volcano. Mm-hmm. And so they're from an alien world that comes to Earth, and their leader is determined to protect the Earth from the ravages of a guy named Rodak, who is basically an intergalactic Genghis Khan, who has decided, set his eyes on Earth next, that's what he's going to conquer. And so Methuselah is the name of this space wizard, comes with Goldar, Silvar, his wife, and Gam, their young son.
Ooh, nice.
And they become space giants. The space giants. That's what it was. I'm sorry.
I so misheard you as space chickens.
Yeah, no, well, no. Maybe there was a show like that, too. But I loved the concept. The kid runs around, the human kid, meets Methuselah, is given a whistle that's in the shape of a little rocket ship. And he blows on the whistle, has this very distinct little tune. And if he blows once, it's for Gam, the young kid, and he and Gam pal around. If he blows twice, it's for Silvar, and she's a human-sized, basically a woman with a silver helmet is what she looks like, and a silver shimmery suit. But it's clearly a human with a suit on. And if he blows three times, it's the 50-foot-tall Goldar, who is a full-out, looks like a robot. He's got antennas and long blonde hair, and he looks incredible. He looks amazing. And so they have, not only did you have the kaiju action, because Rodak would send different kaiju to attack. This is the show that later on would become Power Rangers and all that kind of stuff about the guys and the monsters fighting. But I loved it. I loved it. The space giants.
This sounds like a true segue into the one that our entire audience is waiting for with bated breath.
Okay.
Iron Giant.
Well,
yes.
Before we get there, I have to tell you, those of you who are playing the drinking game at home, drink too, because Aaron just stumped me. I've never heard of this show before.
Really?
I'm looking at it right now on the Google, and I've not seen any of this. I'm looking at, and please understand, I have a very intimate working knowledge of Japanese pop culture.
Yeah.
Never seen this show. Ambassador Magma.
Mark,
the space giants.
Mark, you must watch it. They have many, many of the episodes on YouTube.
I'm in. As soon as we hang up, I'm disappearing down a rabbit hole.
And by the way, they redid the anime much more recently, like early 2000s, I think. So they have those as well. Those are actually called Ambassador Magma.
Right.
And it's with a much more modern, very slick-looking anime style. And the fights are tremendous. I mean, when he's fighting these kaiju, there's massive explosions and all kinds of stuff. But the TV show was just fun. It's guys in rubber suits throwing foam rocks at each other and, you know, that kind of thing.
Everyone's
going to
love that.
I loved it. The Space Giant. So, yes, Mark, yes. Yay, I'm glad I stumped you.
Yeah, you stumped me. Yeah, congratulations, Aaron. That's,
okay.
that's amazing.
Show's over.
Okay, good night, though.
Good night, everybody.
But no, yeah, Iron Giant. Iron Giant was sadly a underappreciated film when it came out. I think many more people have discovered it now.
It's certainly a cult classic now. They did a re-release for the anniversary of it last year, and you know it everybody flocked to it. So
yeah,
totally.
Yeah. It is a beauty in every way. It is a beautiful film, and I wish it had been phenomenally successful. But you know what? Part of me knows that if it had been phenomenally successful, we would now be on Iron Giant 5 direct to DVD, and they'd be horrible, and they would be voiced by horrible voice talent, and you know, it just
Gilbert
that's
Godfrey
the problem.
As the Iron Giant.
Right, that's the yes, you know it. Gilbert Gottfried would be some weird sidekick that some sidekick would build for Iron Giant. No, Iron Giant would still be his name voice, but he'd have the hey, come here.
That was Vin Diesel, right?
Yes,
Vin Diesel at a time when nobody knew who he was and was wondering that's not his real name. The guy playing the robot is named Diesel. Come on,
which was awesome.
But
that's the problem. That's the danger of amazing success. Success, right, mm-hmm. is that mm-hmm. your stuff gets just ground into the dirt, and to where eventually you're like, oh, really? Do we need like baby Iron Giant? And it's like, yeah.
But the Iron Giant,
Scrappy Giant,
yes, Scrappy Giant
power. Really, I mean, we talked about, you know, robots in all sorts of variations, and we talked about a lot of sinister robots with intentions to harm us, or either they go mad or malfunction. Although Westworld, which deserves so much more to talk about, Westworld was amazing. And you feel for Yul Brynner's gunfighter character. If you get shot the fifth time, you're like, okay, this guy really has it coming. You know, and the robot just says, you know what, I'm done being shot. I'm going to shoot you now. It's wow, that's crazy. But the Iron Giant took the robot and made it into a hero, right? Or aspired to be a hero.
And that's very rare.
Yeah.
Right. Which is why, Mark, once you start watching Space Giants, you will notice, you will see a lot of that noble giant robot in Goldar that you later was, I don't know if the creators of Iron Giant saw Space Giants, I would be surprised if they didn't, but that concept of the noble robot giant that protects the planet... That's all there.
It's a very Japanese concept. And of course, I mean, I'm familiar with Johnny Sacco and his flying robot.
Yep.
Tetsuo. Oh, of course, all the Shogun Warriors, right? Great Mazinga, all that stuff.
Right. Ultraman. Inframan, but he was a cyborg. Never mind. Inframan was more cyborg. Jet Jaguar.
Yeah. Yes.
Jet Jaguar.
All that stuff. It is kind of interesting that in Japan, the robots are here to save us. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That's
why they keep creating them in real life.
They keep looking for Jet Jaguar. Who got his ass handed to him, by the way, by Megalon and Gigan until Godzilla showed up late to the party? Thanks, Godzilla.
That's true.
Yeah. Like, where the hell were you, man? I'm getting my ass handed here. Come on.
Is that where he does the jump where he like basically sails across? Yeah. Speaking of which, you said it's a very Japanese thing, Mark. I recently, although it's an older movie, it's a black and white film, I recently saw the film about the giant Japanese stone idol that comes to life,
mm-hmm.
punishes the bad daimyo and that kind of thing. It, going as far back as that, I don't remember when that movie was released, but I'm guessing sometime in the 50s, 40s or 50s.
Is the whole golem idea of, you know, you've got a stone protectorate.
In fact, there we go. That's another great transition to what is the origins of what we today will call a robot, right. and that's exactly one of them. It's the golem.
But even the golem went mad.
Yes,
right.
It did its job. It protected the Jews in Prague. It did its job until Rabbi Lowell either took the star out or he forgot to take the scroll out of his mouth, whichever iteration you want to talk about. But it went mad and it had to be stopped. It went out of control. It was very Frankenstein-like, mankind messing around with things that they shouldn't mess around with. You get this rampaging stone monster, or this rampaging robot, or this computer that wants to kill you.
Yeah, and going even further back than that, in the myths of automatons like Talos, and you know, these constructs that some magically, of course, instead of through technology, are given life and they move around and do this sort of thing.
I will put forward Bubo the Owl from the Clash of the Titans.
Hey.
Who was mechanical, magical, but also mechanical. Hephaestus made him with little gears and, you know, he spoke in a series of complicated bells and whistles.
Basically, he's R2-D2 without any use, you know.
Steampunk Owl was pretty cool. And probably
I love that, Mark. Steampunk Owl.
He was steampunk before there was steampunk. Kind of like Wild Wild West.
Steam did come out of him.
You just elevated Bubo now. Bubo's awesome.
It's actually
all steampunk.
Like I said earlier, I don't like the cute. I don't like the cute comic relief robots. I will make an exception for Bubo. Yeah. Bubo rocks.
He rescued Pegasus, man. He saved the day. He got him out of there. Just saying.
Steampunk Owl. That's awesome. That's the name of my new band, by the way.
Steampunk Owl.
Opening for Steam Power Girl.
Oh my God, that is awesome! But
we opened with a very copyright infringement reference to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Eddie the Shipboard Computer. But I do want to bring up Marvin the Paranoid Android.
Don't talk to me about life.
Here I am, the brain the size of a planet.
I was a big I read the Hitchhiker stuff, but it didn't have the influence on me that other people had of it. But I liked the idea that the robots in Adam's world were just as flawed and damaged as everything else. You know, there was nothing perfect about them. They were just as broken as the rest of us. You know,
Marvin was a prototype. You know, Marvin was a prototype for the personality prototype for the robots and for the AIs. He was supposed to be a test that obviously didn't work.
Right.
And he was a personality prototype. He's very proud. I'm a personality prototype. You can tell, can't you? I mean, he was very depressed. Oh God, I'm so depressed. He was just,
and while the movie wasn't that good, oh dear God, the casting.
Yeah.
Alan Rickman was the perfect casting.
But that 70s series that they had, the BBC produced the TV version of it, and he made a cameo, that version of Marvin made a cameo in the new one, standing in line in the queue to get to the Vogons. There he was. But I don't know, something about that design was so sad.
Yeah.
It was painfully sad.
It's a nice change of pace because there's not a lot of, honestly, I mean, I think, from the list that we've generated, there's not a lot of nuanced robot stories. I mean, I guess if we want to get into fiction, we can talk about, you know, Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics, and of course, those are no longer Asimov's. Those have kind of become universal in a respect. But whenever we talk about movies, whenever we talk about TV shows, you know, the old familiar tropes assert themselves, and
what are those?
Well, it's always that it is always representative of man's hubris.
Okay.
Our intelligence and our ego so great, the things that we can accomplish that we never stop to think about whether or not we should do them, and that's, you know, it's a common idea that, you know, we are the architects of our own destruction.
Sure, but I'm going to toss this out to the table and let all the nerds answer this. What do the robots want?
No disassemble.
No disassemble.
Stephanie, no disassemble.
What do they want? I mean, when they harm us, which goes against one of the laws, I suppose, does they come to the realization that if they don't take us out, we will take them out? Or if they don't take us out, something will happen to the planet, bigger picture? Are they thinking logically? Are we a disease that needs to, you know, that we need the cure for? Do they need to get rid of us? And why? If so, why? Or, here's the part that I really enjoy, what if they really want to be like us and they see what we do and how we are? And we are horrible to each other.
Yeah, it never gets that far, does it? I mean, we always have to stop them before it gets that far. But you could totally do a robot version or rather you could do Animal Farm as a kind of a robot idea. You know, the robots aspire to be the top of the food chain. And I guess it's funny that Animal Farm is an analogy for communism in Russia when the when the term is Slavic in origin. But
yes.
I think that the Matrix probably did the best job of answering why they're keeping us down. You know, the idea that it's cheap, you know, we destroyed the planet by killing the atmosphere. The robots need energy, and so they're using our bioelectric signature, which they can mass produce, you know, they can mass produce to we're fueling the machine.
We're batteries. Yeah,
we're batteries. I love that idea. I think that's actually that was actually the first time that I thought, okay, that makes sense, you know.
And having the insult of Copper Top was fantastic.
Yes. So they want life just as much as we do, and life being, you know, questionable in terms of how do you define a robotic life. Let's jump to Blade Runner because it's brilliant. What do they want? They want to live. They want to do what we do. They want. Yeah. They don't want to expire.
Yeah.
They want to live. And when Roy gives his speech on the roof about the things he's seen,
right.
You know, just you feel for him and you think, you know, you do deserve to live. There's no reason for you to not be here.
Right.
Other than the fact that you're a psychopath. But other than that, I mean, you know, regardless, right. You know, you're just like us.
We are all changed by our experiences. And
yes.
That Roy found beauty in the harsh environment of space that he was set up to operate in.
And set up to be a psychopath.
Speaks to his soul in this mm-hmm. regard, you know. You know, born to kill, but literally transformed by peace. You know,
right.
it's a wonderful analogy for the human condition. But I think that kind of jumps, you know, Blade Runner sort of jumps over the whole premise of robotics, because they're not trying to destroy us, they're trying to be us, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So
let's go around and let's talk about some of the, if you don't mind, do a little round table. Let's talk about a movie or a robot that you want to really focus on, to highlight, to leave our viewers with wanting to explore that robot or that AI or that
good.
All right, so let's recommend to our listeners our fellow robots, because one day they will be our masters. So,
yeah.
Mark,
or at least they're going to be all that's left of human civilization.
Right. Well, actually, Aaron, why don't we start with you?
Well, I've mentioned sort of the robots that I grew up falling in love with, mm-hmm. and thinking, wow, it'd be great to have a robot like robot. I think that would be amazing. As far as one in particular that sticks out, I guess I'm going to have to go with R2-D2. R2-D2 was just, you know, in addition to being sort of the loyal companion, the Sancho Panza, he, and having of course all the abilities of a mech. He's got such personality, and he's so loyal and dogged and attached to his companion. And I know they look at humans as masters, but I don't think he sees it that way. I certainly don't think Luke sees it that way.
Yes.
This is my friend. This is my friend, and I'm going to protect him. And I'm going to help him, and mm-hmm. and he worries and he frets.
And BB-8's the same way.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think that what I love about that particular robot is the one thing that I think we were just saying all robots want. He's so human.
Yeah.
R2-D2 is so human, and so that's what I would want. If I wanted an ideal robot, it would be like the Iron Giant. He would have emotions. He would be confused. He'd get scared. Mm. He would be elated. Because without that, it is just a Roomba. It is just a device that turns your TV on and off.
Sure.
You know, imagine if your remote had a personality. God, wouldn't that be something? Okay, I want to go to this channel. That's a terrible channel. I'm not going to that channel.
You're watching porn again.
What? No, come on. Would you stop taking it off that channel? You're poisoning your mind. Anyway, I think Iron Giant, R2-D2, that mm-hmm. kind of very human, and ultimately, I think that's what transcends the whole idea that it's an artificial creation, because, like I think, Mark, you pointed out, what is the difference between something that's been assembled by us mm-hmm. and something that's been assembled biologically by laws that are put in place in the universe? They're really, it's just a filtering it down further and further, but it's the same process. It's exactly the same process.
Yeah. They are us almost reflected. Yeah. Star Wars, real quick, the bartender in the Mos Eisley's Cantina who says to Luke, hey, you're droids. We don't serve their kind here.
Actually, he doesn't even say droids. He just says, we don't serve their kind here. And
we don't serve their kind.
Yeah.
I always like to think that that guy was probably a veteran of the Clone Wars, or he had a family or a friend or a brother who was killed in the Clone Wars by robots or droids. Because
He does have a backstory, by the way. He has. I don't remember it.
I don't know who he is.
But it does involve him hating droids for some reason.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
And we just got out of a galactic war where the main adversary were Trade Federation droids and killer droids, horrible things like the assassin droids and those Magna Guards and the freaking destroyer droids and the super death bots, whatever they were called. They went over the top.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's like, no, I don't want that in my bar.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
leave those outside. Mickey, how about you? Do you have a robotic character or a movie that you would recommend to our listeners?
I would say that they should both check out Ex Machina.
Oh, my God. I can assure you we have more than two listeners. Damn it. We have at least three.
Beautiful, Mickey. Why Ex Machina?
A lot in the acting, but it's classic science fiction. I mean, it goes off the deep end a little bit towards the end, and a little bit into melodrama operatic style. But
I loved it.
It's beautifully shot, beautifully written, and beautifully acted.
What's the crux of it? Can you give us a kind of a rundown?
It is basically sort of a Turing test. At least that's what it appears to be on the surface, where they're testing to see whether he can tell the difference between a live person and the new robot algorithm that's been written. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of goes off into Frankenstein territory, and there's ulterior motives going on, and what's real and what's not. Mm-hmm. And everybody's got an ulterior motive. Despite the fact it's got a very small, quiet cast.
Okay.
And then there's also Automata, which I loved the first half of and thought the second half was too long. But
is that the one with Antonio Banderas?
Yes. Yeah. It's a beautifully done movie, especially the first half. And then a classic horror film called Hardware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hardware's fun.
Highly recommended. I'll jump in next, and Mark, I'll give you the final bow. My recommendation for those who haven't seen it is a little 1977 film called Demon Seed.
Wow.
That's a robot?
Yes. In the movie Demon Seed, Fritz Lang and his wife Susan Hart live in this highly mechanized, highly advanced home.
Yeah.
And Fritz Weaver leaves her in the care of Proteus 4, which is the AI that runs the house. Proteus 4 wants so badly to be like us, so badly to be human, that he traps the wife in the house, doesn't let her out, and essentially attacks her sexually to try to impregnate her, to put his essence into her, so he could be born through her into flesh.
Right.
It is terrifying. It is a terrifying film.
I have not thought about that movie in years and years and years.
Yeah. Yeah, Demon Seed.
I always thought it was literally a demonic film from the 70s, and I'm like, you can't really outdo The Exorcist.
It is a robot. It is a robot.
Yeah, I had no idea.
With delusions.
AI. It's an AI in a house.
But he controls everything in the house. He controls the doors, the windows, like we talked about, everything, you know, the Nino's going to come and knock you down so that the other clients can come and sexually violate you. That's what's going to happen, by the way. Just like that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think about this stuff. But you have to watch out for these types of things, folks. That's all I'm saying. One day they're going to say that, you know, the only thing standing between me and them is them. So let's get rid of them.
Exactly. I'm gonna we mentioned it briefly, but I will put in a very strong recommendation to go watch Westworld.
Yes,
Michael Crichton's Westworld, and I believe actually Crichton directed the movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's his screenplay, his direction. It's got a lot of 70s-ness to it, in that everybody's wearing a pantsuit. and you know it's the future because everybody's in a jumpsuit. The idea that we have built these robots for our amusement, and he never even really gets into how it goes wrong. It just goes wrong, and when it goes wrong, it goes very wrong.
Totally. And they're working on a series, by the way. You know that, right?
Yes, I'm very excited about the series. But you want to watch the movie first, just because, like good nerds and geeks, you want to be able to go, well, I've seen the original, so blah, blah, blah. But clearly, Crichton's original version was such a blah, blah, blah. We all want to be that guy. So, but yeah, no, Westworld is great. Yul Brynner's in it, Richard Benjamin, one of the few movies I actually like Richard Benjamin in it, James Brolin, very young James Brolin. And it's just a cool idea, very kind of a minimalist film, but it's clear that Crichton has always been a fellow alarmist, along with
these
other guys. In fact, if you've heard Jurassic Park referred to as Westworld with dinosaurs, it's exactly what this is.
It goes bad. Hey, by the way, nerds, if you were going to Future World, would you take on Westworld? Would you go Roman World? Or would you go Medieval World?
I hate to say this because it's going to make me sound like a lech, but I got the best chance of success in Roman World.
I got to say, Roman World has so many Roman-like pleasures.
Yes.
you get to watch gladiator battles. You get to go to these great banquets. Yeah, everyone's scantily clad. But the D&D player in me would be fascinated with Medieval World. I'm not a big enough a fan of Westerns that Westworld would not interest me.
Medieval World, where the robots have sharp, long weapons.
I'm a huge fan of Westerns. I just don't have any confidence that I'm going to be able to outdraw Yul Brynner. I mean, the guy with the Magnificent Seven. Come on!
I've already been to Medieval World. I mean, if you go to TRF and you walk behind the stages, it's all electronic, everything back there. Those aren't real people.
By the way, I did want to just, as a movie, I wanted to throw in really quick, AI. I think it's an underrated film. Of course, it's a Kubrick. But I mean, there are moments in AI that are just painful to watch. Mm. The abandonment scene where the woman drops the little boy off in the middle of the forest and is driving away, and the boy is pleading with her not to leave him there. You know, that's where it gets back to what Joseph said. It's like there is no difference. There's no longer any difference between this robot, who has every right to live and feel, and the human, who's if anything, the human becomes inhuman by the action. Blythe and I saw it in the theater, and she has a hard time. If she sits down and starts to watch that, she starts crying almost immediately. Like, okay, fine, we won't watch it. But AI is fantastic.
All right.
Well, gentlemen, the lights are coming on here in the Lobot Lounge. I think we need to wrap this up for another episode of the Gentlemen Nerds podcast. Final words of wisdom or warning when it comes to artificial intelligences or robots going around the room. I'll start with Mickey Finn.
Remember, red lights are bad.
Yes. Always. Always look for the red light.
I'm looking into a microphone right now that's lit with a red light. Crap.
It's looking back at you, by the way. Keep that in mind. Mark?
Magnus Robot Fighter is not just a decent comic book from Gold Key. It's a battle plan for the future.
Nice.
I like that. I like that. Aaron?
I believe that when we encounter extraterrestrial life, it will be machines. It will be robotic. That is my prediction.
That's sobering, quite frankly.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Well, you watch. And, mark my words.
And what's going to happen is that spaceship's going to open. Here's mine. And they're all going to look like Maximilian. They're all going to roll out, and they're all going to have multiple weapons, drills and cutters and saw blades just attached. Because if you're going to build a robot, go ahead and build them with saw blades. What the hell? What could go wrong?
Machine Man.
Right? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us here at Gentlemen Nerds in the Lobot Lounge. Until next time, be safe out there.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by Mom's Friendly Robot Company.